Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson, and for the next hour, I'll be playing musical tributes by Duke Ellington, James P. Johnson, Benny Carter, and others to a 20th century capital of African American culture. It's Portraits of Harlem, coming up next on Nightlights.
All these tunes in Harlem and old Satchmo swinging, yeah, way up there in Harlem. All the cats are still up there beating out those riffs, and Apollo Puerto Rico give you a great big lift. Oh, drop me off in Harlem, yeah, beautiful Harlem. You get red beans and rice, and it's very nice. So drop me off in Harlem. We'll be right back.
Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington doing Ellington's Drop Me Off in Harlem with Trummy Young on trombone, Barney Bigard on clarinet, Matt Herbert on bass, and Danny Barcelona on drums. I'm featuring musical portraits of Harlem on this edition of Nightlights. Harlem, the predominantly African-American part of New York City that bloomed culturally during the Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s and became known as the capital of Black America, a place that produced and inspired poets, painters, novelists, and musicians. And it also inspired quite a few musical tributes, including everything from bawdy and sensationalist pop numbers to extended concert works by stride pianist James P. Johnson, bandleader Duke Ellington, and others. John Howland, author of Ellington Uptown, James P. Johnson and the Birth of Concert Jazz, says that composers like Ellington and Johnson, who were both popular performers in Harlem, were drawing on their resources as entertainers when they set out to depict Harlem in musical and narrative forms that went well beyond a three-minute record.
What they're doing is actually using arranging routines, programmatic ideas, you know, non-musical details, things, stories. In the book, I talk about a variety of topics, Africa, Dixie, Harlem being important, images that are tied to the music, none of which is really tied to concert traditions, but all of which is coming directly out of Harlem musical theater, Harlem nightclub shows, and in the book I talk about a variety of these early compositions that really start out as production numbers in nightclubs.
Many early Harlem production numbers and songs about Harlem were sensationalistic and full of stereotypes. Reefer madness, dangerous men, and even more dangerous women populated the tunes performed by both white and black artists, charged with an air of the exotic. Harlem was also seen as a place of ongoing celebration, even as the Great Depression ravaged its African-American population. Here's Ella Fitzgerald with Chick Webb's big band in 1937 and Holiday in Harlem on Nightlights.
Thank you. other night. There was really quite a sight. Gather round, folks, while I give you all the lowdown. It's a mess, too. Tables were filled with gaudy frails chewing on their fingernails. They were waiting for the man from Harlem. Throw things are moving kind of slow. Everybody's nerves were getting jumpy. You know, people sort of frivolous like that. All at once the room was still. Men forgot all about the bill. Who should enter but the man from Harlem? Why, look at that cat. He's coming in. He's growling. Just let him growl. Getting off a mess, ain't it? Oh, you muggins. That's what you muggins. Muggins, so help me. I'm going to tell you more about it. Tell you more about it. Everybody rolled their eyes. Women started heaving sighs. Someone hollered, music, lights, and gin. Come on, let's get out here. Everybody cleared his face. They had big, broad smiles on every face. How they all loved to see the man from Harlem. Love it. Oh, when he started in to step, he filled everyone with plenty pep. He'd twist and squirm. It just was a dirty shame. Everyone was in a daze. Women watched him with amaze. Each one said she'd have the man from Harlem. Can you blame him? Can you blame him? Oh, this man's a man. This man in mug. Yes, indeed, Rick. Looked over in the corner. There was a couple frails, and it sure did look kind of low. Another cat walked up and said to the man, Harlem, go over there and see what's the matter them girls there. And he said, I'm kind of low. He said, I got just what you need. Come on, sister, light up one of these weeds and get high and forget about everything. Come on, Satchel.
Cab Calloway doing The Man from Harlem from the early years, 1933-1934. Before that, Ella Fitzgerald with Chick Webb's orchestra doing Holiday in Harlem from Queen of the Savoy. One of the great jazz musicians to come out of the early 20th century Harlem scene was stride pianist James P. Johnson. Johnson was a mentor to the young Fats Waller and the composer of numerous scores for hit musical shows like Runnin' Wild, which featured his song The Charleston. From the late 1920s on, though, Johnson was primarily interested in writing longer pieces that would fulfill, as John Howland writes in his book Ellington Uptown, composer Will Marion Cook's vision for a new black concert music built from the music of Jazz Age Harlem. Yamacraw, a Negro Rhapsody, is Johnson's best-known work in this vein, but he wrote many others, some of which were lost or never recorded. One such significant extended work, called Harlem Symphony, was an attempt to paint a musical portrait of Harlem. John Howland describes how Johnson structured his composition to reflect a Harlem odyssey.
He tries to create a tour of Harlem, and he has a very detailed program, and it's fun to look at the handwritten score because it starts out at Penn Station with a train, and he has all sorts of little detailed notes that this is the Pistons, this is, you know, all sorts of little facets of the oral experience of hearing the subway start out at Penn Station. And you find a lot of these same devices. One, a very popular type of arrangement for certain big bands, because it's kind of spectacular, are train-themed topics. Ellington has a whole range of these. But then as he progresses, there's certain, and you go through the score, it says, now we are at this stop, now we are at this stop, we are in Spanish Harlem, and so you get, you know, certain Spanish style elements that come in. Johnson takes a lot of these things from his work in musical theater. As we get up to Harlem and we hear, are introduced to church folk, where we get a very grand arrangement of a spiritual or a nightclub, he goes in and he either emulates or actually borrows other pieces. I discovered that the whole third movement, Nightclub, comes from a very early stride piano piece of his. And there's a range of other little things that are actually borrowed from very early, extremely important documents of Harlem entertainment. So he, there's kind of a personal story that he's not telling anyone as he's composing this. But at the same time, he's evoking all of these different little parts of his tour around Harlem through devices that he's collected over the years, over, you know, two decades of working in Harlem popular music, in musical theater, and other contexts.
We'll hear some never-released excerpts from 1939 and 1945 concert performances of Johnson's Harlem Symphony now, taken from acetates that have a fair amount of surface noise, used here with the permission of the James P. Johnson Foundation, and beginning with the Brooklyn Civic Orchestra and Subway Journey on Nightlights. Excerpts from 1939 and 1945 concert performances of James P. Johnson's four-movement Harlem Symphony. We heard parts of Subway Journey, April in Harlem, The Nightclub, and Baptist Mission. The first three performed in 1939 by the Brooklyn Civic Orchestra, and Baptist Mission coming from a 1945 tribute to Johnson's music at Carnegie Hall. Johnson's Harlem Symphony got some good notices, and one from a critic named V.O. Clyde provided particular insight into the kind of artistic struggle the pianist was facing. Doyle advised him not to stray too far from his roots and original talent as he tried to forge significant works of concert jazz.
This Clyde review also says, you know, this is the issue of their generation. How do you elevate this sophisticated big band popular music to a recognition of its art? And he, too, sees it as, you know, somehow it has to be some sort of concert-style music. But some of the things that he's saying, encouraging Johnson on, also go back to the generation before Johnson, Will Marion Cook, Will Votery, this first generation that gets black popular music on Broadway and ultimately tries to and establishes black-owned recording companies and music publishing houses. But they too had wanted to create concert music out of this sophisticated Harlem entertainment.
Johnson himself never had a chance to record Harlem Symphony in a studio setting, and the performances you just heard were uncovered decades after he had passed away. So far, Harlem Symphony has remained an obscurity mostly known to scholars. It's a major work by a composer who deserves a higher profile in the history of 20th century American music. The instrumental pop side Harlem Nocturne, on the other hand, was a big hit just years after Johnson's Harlem Symphony was first performed, and it's been recorded by one estimate over 500 times. The song was written by Earl Hagen, who would go on to compose numerous television show themes, including ones for The Andy Griffith Show, I Spy, The Mod Squad, and The Dick Van Dyke Show. That may seem a very far remove from the world of Harlem, but Hagen penned the tune in 1939 as a tribute to Duke Ellington's saxophonist Johnny Hodges and said it was a conscious effort to emulate the Ellington sound. It went on to become an R&B hit for several artists. We'll hear Johnny Otis's version of it now, followed by trumpeter Roy Eldridge's 1951 with strings ode to the metropolis, I Remember Harlem. Johnny Otis and Roy Eldridge on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Trumpeter Roy Eldridge in 1951 performing his composition I Remember Harlem, backed by strings from the Verve CD Little Jazz. Before that, we heard Johnny Otis's band performing their 1945 hit recording of Earl Hoggins' Harlem Nocturne from the Otis Collection Rhythm and Blues Caravan. I'll have more musical tributes to Harlem, including Duke Ellington's Harlem Opus and Benny Carter's late period ode to the Black Metropolis in just a few moments. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, offering new and used music, DVDs, turntables, and more. Located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, and 100% fruit smoothies made with locally grown and organic ingredients on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to Portraits of Harlem on Nightlights. I'm featuring musical tributes to Harlem on this edition of Nightlights, with a major one on the way from Duke Ellington. As Ellington scholar Mark Tucker wrote in his notes for an Ellington anthology, Ellington wrote many musical tributes to Harlem itself, from lively dance pieces to atmospheric blues to songful serenades. And his longtime theme song, Take the A-Train, written by Billy Strayhorn, was a kind of Harlem travelogue as well. For Ellington, Harlem was a home and a source of inspiration. And for many white listeners, even after the Harlem Renaissance, it remained a source of wonder and intrigue. John Howland.
It's a popular idea. I mean, Harlem, even if it's across the Depression into the 40s, it's no longer a real cultural center. The Cotton Club had moved downtown. There were race riots and other issues. It's still something that quite fascinates the national public. And so there is a tension to this romantic idea of what Harlem represents. You know, there is that sense of otherness that whites are latching onto here because we're still quite some time away from civil rights and greater attention to integration. And clearly Ellington, as he's going into his Carnegie Hall performances, and creating programmatic works, those are trying to subtly point out the differences between the realities of Harlem and the romance of Harlem, and the realities of the South, like the Deep South Suite, and the fantasies of the South.
Even before 1943, in his debut of his epic work Black, Brown, and Beige, Duke Ellington had been writing programmatic pieces depicting African-American culture, and his annual appearances at Carnegie Hall throughout the 1940s would spur more such work. His A Tone Parallel to Harlem, or the Harlem Suite, was originally commissioned in 1950 to be a part of an NBC broadcast multi-composer depiction of New York City. The NBC broadcast never happened, but Ellington recorded Harlem anyway, and it's now considered to be one of his most successful extended compositions. As always with such works, Ellington had a narrative message in mind, and he put together an elaborate program describing what various musical events in the suite signified. Harlem would stay in his performing repertoire for the rest of his career, and his program for it would reflect ongoing social, political, and cultural events.
It's like Johnson's idea of a travelogue through Harlem. It's interesting, though, because it changes over time. This is the problem with, you know, programs, how loosely they can be tied to actual music, and that certainly goes well back to the 19th century, where you'd have works written first and then, you know, some descriptive program put on top. But I think, you know, in most Ellington cases, these were written at least in kind of outline beforehand. There's some things that you can, you know, very much tie on to the sound and idioms of what's happening moment by moment in the music. You get Latin American rhythms thrown in a certain neighborhood, and you get other facets of Harlem musical communities. But then, as he begins to talk about civil rights pronouncements and so forth, which are absolutely at the heart of the early program that he wrote for this, it's a little tentative tying to that, but it's clearly, you know, something that if an audience member is sitting down and looking at a program, he's wanting to convey that this music is ultimately about, you know, we are educated, cultured people, and we demand our own civil rights.
Thank you.
Duke Ellington's Harlem, performed by Ellington's Big Band and the Paris Symphony Orchestra in 1963, from the album The Symphonic Ellington, a recording and work seemingly far removed from the so-called Jungle Nights atmosphere of late 1920s and 30s Harlem, from which Ellington's orchestra had first emerged. And yet, John Howland says, artists like Ellington, James P. Johnson, their predecessors, and some who followed them would appropriate the stereotyped images that often accompanied Harlem entertainment and songs about Harlem and turn them into something else.
I think it was actually both an embrace and countering it at the same time. I mean, it's a classic African-American dual reality and dual perspective on this, that they grasped the power of this imagery, but they create it as something positive, as something, you know, there's a certain aspect of the spin as they create these concert works that, and you know, even just looking at the programs, that absolutely embraces such imagery, but at the same time imbues it with cultural pride aspirations, like in the Harlem Suite program, aspirations for civil rights, and so forth. And this is something that they both very much cared about, and something that they had gotten from Will Marion Cook as well.
I'll close with music representing both the sacred and streetwise sides of Harlem, something from saxophonist and composer Benny Carter, who in the twilight of his long and incredibly productive career wrote a suite for big band and orchestra celebrating the Harlem Renaissance. From it we'll hear Sunday Morning, which is appropriate for a program about Harlem, given that the area has over 400 churches. First, an excerpt from avant-garde composer Clifford Thornton's Gardens of Harlem album, recorded in 1974 with the Jazz Composers Orchestra, the brassy groove Blues City on Nightlights. I close with Benny Carter leading a big band and orchestra in performance of Sunday Morning from his Harlem Renaissance Suite. Before that, Clifford Thornton and Blues City from Gardens of Harlem. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to John Howlin, the estate of James P. Johnson, and Rod Stasek. James P. Johnson archival audio recordings generously provided by the James P. Johnson Foundation of Riverside, California, and Barry Glover. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, offering new and used music, DVDs, turntables, and more. Located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, and 100% fruit smoothies made with locally grown and organic ingredients on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. You can listen to other Nightlights programs and view playlist, jazz news, and commentaries on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. This is David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.